I'm going to call the meeting to order, even though we don't have a quorum yet. So I know that Representative Grunhagen was going to move the minutes, but we'll have to hold off until we have a quorum, Representative Grunhagen.
Yep.
So we do have, I have an introduction to make here, but I think I'm going to hold off just until we get some more members in the room so that we can be sure that as many members as possible hear that. So today, members, we have, it's Dan Schoen Day here in the Health and Human Services Policy Committee. So even though we don't yet have a quorum, we're just a little bit short. I think, Representative Schoen, if you are ready, I think we'll start talking about your bills, and then when we get a quorum, I will invite you to move your bill. So which bill are we starting with, Representative Schoen?
Madam Chair, House File 75.
Okay, so members, we're going to start by discussing House File 75, and Representative Schoen, welcome to the committee if you want to introduce your bill.
Madam Chair, members, I'd like to move House File 75.
Right, Representative Schoen, since we don't have a quorum, we can't
really
move it.
How about I just talk about it?
But shortly, I will interrupt you when we get a quorum, which should be very shortly, and we will move your bill.
All right, Madam Chair. House File 75 is related to community of paramedics. It's something that was passed through the legislature last year or the previous 2 years. This is a technical fix related to continuing education that was overlooked in the original legislation, and I have a testifier here to explain exactly what that is.
Okay, and I believe we have a quorum now, Representative Schoen. So, Representative Grunhagen, you had a motion.
Yeah, I'll move the minutes.
Thank you, Representative Grunhagen. Moves the minutes of February 13, 2013. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All opposed, no. The motion prevails. The minutes are adopted. And now, Representative Schoen, if you would like to move House File 75.
Madam Chair, I would like to move House File 75.
Okay. Representative Schoen moves that House File 75 be recommended to pass and placed on the general register.
And, Madam Chair, I have a author's amendment to get the bill in order as well, too.
Okay, and so Representative Schoen moves the, is that the A1 amendment?
Yes, Madam Chair.
So Representative Schoen moves the A1 amendment to get the bill in the order in which you would like. So we'll put that on the bill and then we'll discuss it with that on. So all those in favor of the A1 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed, no. Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. So we now have the bill before us in the correct order. Go ahead.
Madam Chair, I'd like to introduce Buck McKelpin from North Memorial, who's the world expert on community paramedics.
Welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair, thank you. For the record, Buck McKelpin, I work with the Minnesota Ambulance Association and our community paramedic program and government affairs for North Memorial. This legislation was originally Representative Mack's the last two sessions. 2 years ago, we passed certification for community paramedic. It's the first legislation in the country that allows our paramedics with 300 hours of additional training to serve a primary care role, working with public health and taking care of people in their homes, and not always in the back of ambulances. And the second year, we passed legislation with Representative Mack in the legislature to enable medical assistance to cover this. And last year in our bill, Madam Chair and members, we forgot to add the continuing education. After your 300-hour program, the EMS Regulatory Board issues you a community paramedic card, and you also have a 911 emergency paramedic certification that requires 48 hours of training every 2 years. What we're adding here is for our community paramedics. They have to complete 12 additional hours in primary or clinical care for a total of 60 hours. So, and the amendment just had to be done because we forgot the word renewal. And they caught that in the Senate for us, and we fixed that up and have that before you. But with that, the community paramedic program has taken off. We have 10 of them at North Memorial. Alina, Health East, Hennepin County, even some of our fire-based systems are implementing community paramedic. As we all talk about population health around here and in our healthcare settings, there's been quite a demand about what we do with this. We have to report back to the legislature next year about some of the cost savings and data that we're collecting around the population.
Okay, any questions from members? Representative Abler.
Mr. Madam Chair, thanks. And I feel already had the joke, but it's like, you know, happy Shone Day at the fair here. I said, snacks are from you, that's good. This is a great program. It's got such potential, and it's good it can move forward, so I just wanted to give it a plug. So.
Madam Chair, on that note, I just wanted to point out that I do have treats here, and there is a healthy option for the Health and Human Services Committee. Thank you, Representative Abel.
All right, and thank you, Representative Shone. Yeah, somebody probably want to send those around and circulate them to the committee. Thank you, Representative Abel. Okay. Is there anybody else who wants to testify for or against this bill? All right, I'm not seeing anybody else who wants to testify for or against this bill. Now, members, before we move to a vote on this bill, I think it's important for me to let you know that we have a new member who will be voting with us today. And I'd like to introduce to you Representative Clark Johnson, who is joining our committee. Welcome, Representative Johnson.
Thank you.
And, Representative Johnson, I know it's a little bit out of order since we have this bill before us, but maybe you would like to just give us a few words about your background and particularly anything that might be related to Health and Human Services or your interest therein, if you have any.
I'll try. I live in North Mankato. I've lived there about 25 years. The last 28 years, I've been a professor at Minnesota State University, Mankato. From there, and come in thinking about issues related to this committee, is I do see students who are challenged with mental health issues. And so that is part of the learning experience in higher education, so I do see that. I worked for Minnesota Valley Action Council as a community outreach worker in Blue Earth County for several years back in 84-85, and 82 through 85. So that brought me into, I worked with people who come from poverty, and so I built an understanding of that. I think that relates to this, some of the work of this community. And I guess I'm a determined advocate to deal with poverty. So that's what brings me here. I've been politically active a long time. I had no expectation to run for office until this opening came in mid-December, and thought about it and chose to run. And I'm quite honored that the folks in my neighborhood chose to send me to St. Paul. So here I am. Thank you for having me.
Thank you, Representative Johnson. Another member of the Johnson Caucus here at the legislature.
All right.
Yes. So, thank you. Okay. Is there any other discussion about House File 75? All right. Seeing none, Representative Schoen will renew his motion that House File 75 be recommended to pass as House File 75 as amended. Be recommended to pass and placed on the general register. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All opposed, no. The motion prevails, and the bill is passed to the general register.
Thank you.
Next on the agenda, I assume you want to do 201?
Madam Chair, I'd move House File 201.
All right. Representative Schoen moves House File 201. That it be recommended to pass and be placed on the general register. And we have the bill before us, Representative Schoen. If you would like to, is there an author's amendment on that one? No.
No, ma'am.
Okay. So go ahead and let us know about that one.
Madam Chair, members, this is a housekeeping bill that has to do with national standards and conformity to that. The main 4 points is that it adds advanced life support, which adds new certification level to ambulance staffing. Under inspections, it allows the board to accept inspection files electronically. And then there's an emergency medical responder registration, and that aligns and clarifies education program requirements with new standards. And then AEMT is added. It requires education programs teaching AEMT to be accredited by the Commission of Accreditation of Allied Health Education Programs. And once again, Buck McAlpin.
All right. Thank you, Representative Schoen.
Madam Chair, members, this Representative Schoen's right. This is just a housekeeping bill we've worked on with the state EMS board. They missed some of their deadlines with the governor's submittal and as the association. Our EMS Education Association works with the EMS board closely, and we worked on this to add some language we missed last year, too, as we worked on some of their credentialing requirements for advanced EMT. With federal conformity, they eliminated the definition of emergency medical technician intermediate, and they now call it advanced EMT. So we need these folks to be able to put the ambulance crew, and that's what's put in here is the big piece of it.
All right. Are there questions? So I don't see any questions, but I do, Mr. McAlpin, I think this is, if other members are like me, this is a little bit bewildering, this stuff. And maybe you could just back up a bit, since we're not real pressed for time right now.
Sure.
And just tell us, I know this is following on some legislation that was passed. I think Representative Quam carried a bill, and that kind of reorganized the way this stuff is done because of some federal changes. Or maybe you could just give us the really high-level overview of what's going on here, if you would.
Absolutely, Madam Chair. And we met with Representative Liebling early in the session about some questions as our educational facilities have changed. We have some small, I would call them mom-and-pop educational facilities that work in conjunction with EMS education facilities, and then large ones like North Memorial has or Hennepin Technical Schools have. And they went to more of a proficiency-based skill as they've added things with emergency management, intravenous IM drugs, epinephrine, nitroglycerin, things that now EMTs or advanced EMTs can give in ambulances. There's basically three levels of certification. The first responder is about a 48-hour program. The EMT can run from emergency medical technician advanced from 120 to 140-ish, depending on your competency. And then the paramedic level is a national curriculum of about 1,400 hours. Most of them now are two-year associate degree programs in paramedics. So somebody may be able to complete the course in 110 hours if they're very competent in how they do it, and some folks may need the longer piece of it. I know as we've transitioned from this, there's been some talk with some of the students that have went through the program. And I know Pam Bilodeau's here from the MSRB if there's any questions. And they've worked with the Attorney General at the Regulatory Board office, how we're sure we're issuing folks the right type of certification cards that are completing the program now during the transition from the older dialogue we used around EMT to advanced EMT, and what they do now from going to a competency-based program than just a flat amount of hours and a skills program.
Okay, thank you. Any questions? Yeah, Representative Mack.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a brief question, trying to just understand Section 4 of the bill, the approval required and how an education program gets approved by the board. Is that a big separation from what's currently required with a lot of the education programs around this, or is this pretty much in line with that? I'm just trying to get an understanding of if this is a whole new direction or if it's just aligning it with what's already expected of the application process.
Yeah.
And I guess just a follow-up, just wondering if this adds adds burden or adds or if it's nothing new to what these organizations are used to.
Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Pam Bilodeau. I'm the Executive Director for the Emergency Medical Services Regulatory Board. Thank you for hearing our bill. And to answer your question, no, this is not. It's more of a clarification. It's what already existed, but it was not well spelled out. This is exactly the same process that's been used for years, and it doesn't add any burden. The only change that I will say is that in the new standards, it does require a medical director. So that is the only addition. And that's been required for EMTs and paramedics, community paramedics.
Madam Chair.
Representative Matt.
I'm sorry, so if I follow what you said in terms of it requires a medical director, the program itself, any new program has to have a medical director directly responsible for that program. Is that, am I understanding that correctly?
Any program. And the reasoning for that is Minnesota has all of our pre-hospital care personnel work underneath the medical director's license. And they're certified. They're not licensed. And so the medical director is a really key component of public protection and ensuring that there is some oversight at that level, especially since it's under their licensure.
Representative Mack?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I remember the conversation when we were doing community paramedic legislation about the importance of medical directors and their role in this whole process. So thank you. Thank you for that.
Thank you.
Representative Ward.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Kind of maybe more clarification and interest than maybe directly compared or associated with the bill. With the advanced work that the EMTs are doing, what are the paramedics doing that the EMTs are not?
Mr. McCall.
Yeah, Madam Chair, Representative Ward. The EMTs and the advanced EMTs, and that's why Representative Mack's question on medical direction is interesting. The reason why we're able to do what we're doing, we do in Minnesota with community medic and skill level, is we are exempt in law, one of the only states, from scope of practice. So our paramedics operate at a floor, and our medical director moves them to a ceiling. That's how our helicopter crews are doing chest tubes, very advanced skills that you wouldn't see usually done in an ambulance. The advanced EMT, and what's nice about that, is they're giving epinephrine, usually EpiPens. They're giving nitroglycerin under the tongue. They're giving aspirin. They're giving albuterol and nebulizer treatments to patients. So in parts of the state where we can't afford to have advanced life support, we can offer that at the EMT level. Then on the paramedic side, the big difference is intravenous medications, the morphine, the Versed, Haldol, all types of different drugs that they're giving, succinylcholine to paralyzed patients, and advanced airway placement. Our paramedics do endotracheal intubation, cricothyrotomies, chest tubes, and things that we have to do to sustain life quite away from our trauma centers or hospitals. So those are the big differences, but we are pushing the level of training, or the level of skills that an EMT can do, mostly because in some parts of the state they're it for quite a while.
Representative Mack.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just one follow-up to the medical director question. I'm assuming this isn't the case, but just want to clarify. That piece doesn't add any cost. Medical directors are already in place, and you just have to have one to supervise a particular program, or are there any costs involved with that?
Mr. McCallum.
Madam Chair, Representative Mack. No, most of them are employed by large systems or are part of the educational facility. Okay. And they'll oversee thousands of students as they go through.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. All right. Seeing no other questions or no other discussion, is there anyone in the audience who wishes to testify for or against this bill? All right. Seeing none, Representative Schoen renews his motion that House File 201 be recommended to pass and placed on the general register. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed, no. The motion prevails and the bill is passed.
Thank you.
You're on a roll, Representative Schoen.
Did we get all those rolls eaten up? don't forget, two more healthy options there, Wass.
I'll take another roll.
All right. We have House File 455. And Representative Schoen, are you ready to move House File 455?
Okay. All right, Madam Chair, I'd like to move House File 455.
Representative Schoen moves House File 455 that it be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Health and Human Services Finance. So,
all right.
Go ahead, Representative.
Madam Chair, members, House File 455, is a new innovation in the recovery and support for individuals who are using public-funded consolidated chemical dependency treatment funds. These funds currently can only be used for treatment by a Rule 31 provider. In 2009, the legislature passed a bill that allowed two pilot projects to use the CCDTF funds flexibly to provide additional supports for individuals who have severe chemical dependency. The pilot project's participants experienced an increase in housing stability, employment, and sobriety. The counties also saw a decrease in detoxification from the participants. And we have two speakers here today to testify about what they have learned from the pilots and request statewide implementation.
All right. Thank you, Representative Schoen. Welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Cindy Rupp. I am a division manager in Washington County, and I have oversight over the chemical health programs. Thank you for the opportunity to address the committee. In my testimony today, in addition to speaking on behalf of Washington County, I am also representing the Minnesota Inter-County Association, commonly referred to as MICA. Thank you to Representative Schoen for sponsoring House File 455. This bill authorizes the Department of Human Services and interested counties to work in partnership to augment the current chemical health delivery system. The services in this bill help people to access additional resources and support in order to improve outcomes such as sobriety, employment, and stable housing, which are key factors to people who are in recovery. This bill allows statewide implementation of components of a recovery-oriented system of care that research indicates provides the best opportunity for individuals with chemical dependency to engage in long-term sobriety and recovery. The counties will use a portion of the Consolidated Chemical Dependency Treatment Fund more flexibly for a subset of the population who need additional support services or alternatives from traditional treatment services. Currently, the fund can only be used for treatment in a Rule 31 program. The eligible population for these services is individuals who have at least one high severity rating on the assessment tool and at least two treatment episodes in the last 2 years. An emergency room visit, a detox admission, or a hospitalization may be substituted for one of the treatment episodes. The services provided under this bill are not currently available in the existing Consolidated Chemical Dependency Treatment Fund system. Washington County and Region 10 in southeastern Minnesota were pilot projects authorized by the legislature in 2009 that models this bill. The pilots end July 31st, 2013. The services the pilot provides, which are included in this bill, include a navigator service, peer support, housing support, a rent subsidy for 3 months, supported employment, and independent living skills development. The system navigator's role is to identify the services a person needs upon intake and to assist them to access these services. We believe the service access and flexibility for this population will lead to improved outcomes. The early data on the pilot project indicates an increase in housing stability, employment, and sobriety. We also saw a decrease in the rate of detoxification. In addition, many of these individuals had serious medical issues that they had no access to medical care, and the navigator was able to help them access health care programs and then treatment. My colleague, Heather Gertz, from the Region 10 Pilot Project, will provide you with more data on outcomes in the next testimony. The financing aspect of this proposal is as follows. There will not be an increase in state expenditures as a result of this change. This project will use the money flexibly. The commissioner may restructure payments to the participating counties. The current payment system is set up to only reimburse Rule 31 providers. The counties are at risk for overspending for the services that we authorize under this bill. If the state fiscal expenditures are less than the forecasted expenditures, the commissioner will deposit unexpended funding into a special revenue fund for the participating counties. This bill allows the commissioner to seek federal waivers and approvals necessary to allow managed care organizations to use capitated funds received from the state to access non-treatment services as defined in Subdivision 5. Thank you for the opportunity to participate in the pilot project since 2010. We found the flexibility provided to a group of individuals with severe problems with chemical abuse and multiple other issues were critical in helping them to receive the support they need and to stabilize their lives. I'm here today to ask for your support in allowing the states and counties to continue their work together to continue this project statewide, which I believe will lead to better use of county and state dollars. I stand for questions.
Thank you very much. And members, I carried the legislation in 2009 for the original pilot for this, and so I'm really interested in hearing about the outcomes from that. But I think this is just to kind of give members a little more orientation to this. I think it has to do a lot with sort of what we talk about a lot these days in healthcare, that to use a kind of wraparound services instead of just providing sort of disjointed recovery services, that some people who are high-end users of these services do much better when we can flexibly give them some pieces that they need in order to actually succeed and stop being high users of some very expensive services. Did I sort of say that correctly?
Madam Chair, I just could not have said that better myself. But just let me add one thing, and that is what we found in the pilot, that these were people who did not have a very good skill set, and they would not have accessed the service after treatment that they needed in order to improve their outcomes. And so without the added support, we're going to see a revolving door of treatment.
All right. Thank you. Representative Franzen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And for the record, Representative Schoen, thanks for the donut that helped my diet, too. Anyway, I'm wondering about the recidivism rate of the pilot program. Could you explain if there is what the recidivism rate was?
Ms. Root.
Or is?
Madam Chair, Representative, I don't have that data available with me today. I'm wondering if Heather will.
I don't have recidivism data with me about who entered in lab.
Well, wait. We have to do this into the tape. So if you're going to tell us something, you have to come up. But you're the next testifier anyway, right? So why don't we have the next testifier come up, and she will see if she can address Representative Franzen's question. Or she'll tell us what she can tell us. Welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the record.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Heather Gertz. I'm the clinical director at Zumbro Valley Mental Health Center, and I have directly supervised the Southeast Minnesota CD pilot project, which consists of 10 counties in the southern half of Minnesota, for the past 2 years. I would like to share some key outcomes and a true success story from the pilot project. The Southeast Minnesota CD pilot project has provided intensive services to 80 individuals since the start of the project. Caseload sizes are at a very minimum, with having navigators have a maximum of 12 to 15 cases on their caseload. The individuals that have been served in the pilot project had a combined total of 221 detox admissions for the 2 years prior to their participation in the pilot project. This number has decreased by more than 50% in the 2 years that they were in the pilot. As of December 31st, 2012, the participants have had a combined total of 99 detox admissions since entering the pilot, and more than 25% of these detox admissions came from one individual, which was a data outlier. Conversely, more than half of the individuals have had zero detox admissions since entering the pilot. There have also been significant results regarding housing and employment. 56% of the clients were homeless prior to the pilot. Within the first year, all but one were housed. Only four clients were actively employed when entering the pilot. But after participating in the pilot, 69% of the clients are actively employed, enrolled in school, or volunteering. I would like to end with the story of Jane. Jane entered the Navigator program a little over 2 years ago. When she entered the program, Jane was homeless and on a CD commitment as a result of being found sleeping under a bridge, intoxicated in 0 degree temperatures. The pilot helped her transition from inpatient treatment to a halfway house and then to a sober board and lodge. After about a year, Jane was able to transition into her own apartment, where she still resides and is doing well. This summer, Jane was reunited with her daughter, who she hadn't seen in over 5 years due to her chronic chemical use and inability to achieve sobriety. Jane now has daily phone contact with her daughter and has had several face-to-face visits, facilitated by transportation assistance of the Navigator. Jane is going to school now and is close to getting her GED. Jane has plans to get a job working at a detox or something similar because she wants to help others overcome what she has. Jane now has over 2 years of sobriety. I want to thank you for the opportunity to participate in the CD pilot project since 2010. The two pilot projects have found the flexibility, as Cindy said, to provide a group of individuals with severe problems with chemical abuse and other life issues to have the critical assistance in helping them receive the support to stabilize their lives. I am here today to ask for your support in allowing the state and counties to continue to work together to implement this project statewide, which will lead to a better use of county and state tax dollars. I stand for questions from the committee.
All right. Well, thank you. And Representative Franson, we do want to try it again now, maybe with this witness.
Well, I think that you kind of answered it, but so 221 detox admissions, right? 50%. It decreased by 50%. 99 detox admissions. Could you explain that? And then you said that 25% came from one person.
Right. So that's the decrease in the 50%. So in the 2 years prior to the pilot project, there were 221 admissions to the detox. In the 2 years after the pilot started, then there were only 99. So it's a decrease of 50%. 25% of those were from one individual. So if you take, you know, the 25, you know, minus 100, so roughly only 75 of those were from the other members in the sample size.
Representative Franson?
No.
No? Okay. Other questions, members? Okay, well, okay, Representative Fritz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just thinking about those that didn't get helped, the homeless. I just came from a fundraiser down in Faribault for Ruth's House, a shelter for women and children, and they have a waiting list, and we hear the good stories, but I still know of the people that are still sleeping under the bridges and in the cars and in other people's homes on their sofas that are unemployed and addicted and using that we haven't been able to help. So what about an outreach? Is there an outreach piece component to this?
Ms. Geertz?
Madam Chair, Representative, there is an ability for some outreach. What we do is individuals are referred into the program from their county of financial responsibility. So at the initiation of this project, we did do outreach, we did do education about what this program was, the type of services that we could offer. At this point, we are not staffed in a capability to be able to have someone do specifically outreach services. The key to this program is the small caseloads and the intensive services. For some of these individuals, we are meeting with them daily to help support them through an active crisis. And so we want to make sure that we are able to maintain that intensive service. So it is something that we could potentially look at, but it's not a current part of the services that we're providing.
Madam Chair,
Representative Fritz.
Follow-up, and thank you. So the caseload is 12 to 15 per?
Ms. Geertz.
Madam Chair, Representative, yes. The average caseload is 12 to 15 clients.
Thank you.
Okay, and Ms. Geertz, I have a question, actually. First of all, it's when we start out with 80 cases and 221 detox admissions, and I assume that's over a year, or Ms. Geertz?
Madam Chair, that is for the 2 years prior to their admission into the pilot project for those 80 individuals.
Right. Well, thank you. And that is that just shows you that of these 80 cases, these are people with very severe chemical dependency. So reducing that by half is quite an accomplishment when we're talking about people with this kind of severity. And I wonder if you could just talk, even though we're not the finance committee, I wonder if you could just say a word about the financial savings from that. What does it cost a county to admit somebody to detox? Do you know, ballpark?
Madam Chair, if I could refer to my colleague, Ms. Rupp, as representing the county system for the actual cost for the county.
Sure. Ms. Representative Franson wants to say something first before she answers that question. Representative Franson?
Yes, Madam Chair. Thank you. I'm just wondering here, this program, the Chemical Health Navigation Program, is supposed to reduce the revolving door. And could you explain how that is working today?
Okay, so welcome back to the committee, Ms. Rupp. Do you want to first address the question about the costs, the savings? Just give me a ballpark of what we're talking about when we say, when we prevent a detox admission. How much money are we talking about?
Madam Chair, the in the metro area, the cost of a day of detox on average is $225 a day. The reason I hesitate in answering that is that I do know in outstate where the detox centers are much smaller, that the cost of detox on a daily basis is higher. So I can give you what our cost is, $225 a day.
Okay, thank you. And then to address Representative Franzen's question, Ms. Geertz, were you going to take a crack at that one?
Sure. Madam Chair, Representative. Okay, please, I'm sorry, remind me of your question.
Representative Franzen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The question is, this program is supposed to reduce the revolving door. Could you please tell the committee how that is working today?
Yeah, Ms. Geertz.
Madam Chair, I will refer to my success story of Jane. If you look at Jane, she had been in and out of treatment facilities on and off. Prior to entering our project, she was homeless, living under a bridge. So she wasn't utilizing healthcare services. She wasn't being treated for underlying mental health disorders. And so by entering into the program, we were able to have stability in her life. We were able to get her housing. We were able to help her achieve sobriety. And so it prevented the revolving door of having to enter treatment, then be sober for a month or two, relapse, access numerous services, go back into treatment, and come back out. And it has allowed this one case study to have sobriety for over 2 years.
Thank you, Ms. Geertz. And, of course, let's not forget that's somebody's mom, right?
Yep.
So something else, Representative Franzen?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mrs. Geertz, that's one story. And we've heard that twice now. I'm just wondering how many people in the program that this has helped. You've talked about one person.
Ms. Geertz.
Madam Chair and Representative. Yes, I don't have, I mean, I could go through a lot of other outcomes. I could give specific examples on multiple individuals. I don't have the exact number of what all of the outcomes for individuals are. I can say that there, I don't have an exact number of how many people have been prevented from going into treatment. I can say that from looking at the caseloads in southeast Minnesota, not counting Washington County, we have several, like I said, individuals that are now employed, they are housed, they are functioning within their community. And so by allowing them to function within the community, we would see that they're not accessing that high number of services.
Representative Allen has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I wanted to just clarification. You this is a pilot. I mean, it's part of a model program. It's probably not unique, but it's very it's something different than how the state and county agencies have been dealing with this problem, and I just wanted to, if you could talk a little bit about we're talking about what is success and money and about how the individuals that you're serving, I mean even if there's just a few that you know that are in this program, but you're trying to develop a model, but also the measuring success is something that can be, it's not. The end result is not necessarily that the individuals are going to maintain long-term sobriety, because we know that if we treat it as a disease, then oftentimes we can how you treat the individual you reduce, they could maybe live longer, so that they're not dying from exposure or dying from and that each time usually it takes more than once to be successful at sobriety, more than one treatment. So the success, I mean, how you measure that is one, reduce cost, and also that they live long, utilize hospitalization, healthcare services goes down. So if you want to speak to that, thank you.
And who was that question directed to, Ms. Rupp?
Yes.
Ms. Rupp.
Madam Chair, Representative, what this pilot project really is about is moving from an acute care system of care, which is the Minnesota model currently. People get in trouble for some reason, whether it's a DWI, whatever it is. There's a tremendous overlap in this pilot with people who are in the court system and in probation. Trying to move to a continuing care model for those people who are most impaired, because that's what we have found. If this is a disease, then we need to develop a system that offers care along a continuum that people can access as they need it, not be treated, have a discharge plan, go back to the community, probably not follow it up, get into trouble again, then they go back into the treatment system and repeat the pattern again and again. So it is really hard to track who didn't we send to treatment because of this. It is, I will admit, easier to track how many fewer days of detox did we have, how many people got jobs that hadn't worked in a long time. So those are the kinds of things that this pilot tracked. And trying to develop a continuum care model.
Thank you. All right, thank you. Representative Albright.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the testifier, on line 1.11, talks about flexibility for eligible individuals. Wondering what level of criteria or what would be the subjective or objective threshold that would entitle a participant to this program to be identified as being eligible for it, as compared to one of the other programs at the county level.
And Ms. Rupp, I suppose you're going to answer that. I think it would refer to subdivision 4 of the bill, which is eligibility for Navigator program. Is that kind of where that answer might be found? And then go ahead, Ms. Rupp.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative, well, first of all, in order to be eligible for this program, you have to be eligible for the consolidated fund. You also have to have a Rule 25 assessment, which determines that you meet a level of care that is required for this program. That level of care means that on the state assessment, you have to have a severe rating in one of the areas. And you have had to have received two separate episodes of treatment within the last 2 years in order to be considered.
Representative Albright.
Just to follow up then, if there's any opportunity to just elaborate on what a severe rating means, Madam Chair.
Ms. Rupp? Ms. Geertz?
Madam Chair, Representative, I am not a certified Rule 25 assessor in the state of Minnesota, so I can't speak directly to what classifies as a severe rating. What it does indicate is that individuals are rated from a 1 to a 5, I believe, and so a severe rating is greater than 3, but it would be it's an evidence-based assessment tool that is used in the state of Minnesota to assess individuals across the board on the ratings.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, I've got a couple of other names, and then we do have another testifier, so just so everybody knows. Representative Franza.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Ms. Gertz, is that how you pronounce it? Okay. So back to the recidivism, I'm just wondering, shouldn't you have numbers that demonstrate lowering the recidivism rate? Meaning, is there a tracking of chronic repeat persons in the program and how this helps lower the recidivism rate? Because if not, it would seem odd that if the program is to reduce the revolving door, which it sounds like that's what your program is aiming to do, to reduce that revolving door, and if tracking is not being done, how many times they pass through the door, how can you prove that your program is working and worth passing into law?
Ms. Geertz.
Madam Chair, Representative, can I ask one clarifying question? When you're talking about recidivism, what recidivism are you talking about? Are you talking about access to or admission to a detox, emergency room services, admission to a treatment facility?
Can you clarify what recidivism you're talking about?
Representative Franson.
Well, the goal is your maybe I've got it wrong. Maybe your program isn't to get people off of whatever it is that they're addicted to. But I would hope that is the goal.
Ms. Geertz.
Madam Chair, Representative, the goal is to help individuals achieve their recovery goals. And this is a harm reduction program. So in some cases, it is to achieve sobriety. In other cases, it is a harm reduction. So it may mean having them be living in an apartment versus living on the streets. It may mean rather than accessing detox or emergency room, they're able to maintain within their outpatient care providers. So the ultimate goal is not always to have complete sobriety.
Interesting.
Representative Abler.
I'll wait till the testifiers are done.
All right. Thank you. Ms. Rupp, you have a comment, and then we'll go to the other testifier.
Madam Chair, I'd just like to add to Heather's testimony that every 6 months there is data that we have to do that does go into the state of Minnesota. We don't have that data back yet in terms of what the outcomes, but part of what the data is about, have you drank in the last 6 months? Have you had any treatment days in the last 6 months? So I believe the data that you're asking about is being collected. I just don't think we have it back yet.
All right. Thank you. Okay. Next testifier, Jay McLaren. Welcome to the committee. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Jay McLaren, and I'm the Director of Government Relations at Medica. And today I'm testifying on behalf of Medica. We haven't had a chance to run some of these things by the council, so just on behalf of Medica today. So I appreciate you hearing from me this afternoon, Madam Chair and members, and I've spoken to the author of the bill about what I'm about to speak about, and I want to start with, I spoke with some of our people who work with people in state public programs, particularly PMAP and Medicaid, and they're supportive of the concepts in the bill. I mean, we're constantly looking for ways to try to improve the outcomes for these people with these chemical health issues. So we support these concepts, and we are supportive of the pilot project that was happening in Washington and Olmsted counties, and we look forward to the report that we understand or the evaluation we understand is going to be made available within the next month, month and a half, if it's on time. So we look forward to seeing that. But as I've shared with Representative Schoen, we are concerned about the language. If you look on page 3, lines 3.28 and 3.29, and in talking to the testifiers before the committee hearing, we are all supportive of the next three lines, the line 3.30 to 3.32, where managed care organizations can be working in coordination and pay for the type of services that they're providing to these people with chemical health issues to provide more positive outcomes for them. However, that language I identified on 3.28 and 3.29, it's my understanding that that would allow people who would participate in this program to be enrolled in Medicaid fee-for-service. We're concerned about this for a couple reasons, and I appreciate working with the author and others to find an alternative or perhaps remove the language later on. But just for background purposes, Medica right now is participating in a pilot project. It's called the Preferred Integrated Networks, or PINS project with Dakota County, where it's something similar, but we are focusing a little bit more on mental health and people in managed care who have a history of mental health issues. So it's similar things where we're working with Dakota County to connect them with housing, connect them with other financial supports, connect them with social services to help improve their health outcomes and management of their mental health issues. But then also, in addition to that, working with the rest of their healthcare needs, the rest of the healthcare needs, for example, working with their primary care physician to better coordinate primary care. So it's similar to what's being worked on in Washington and Olmsted counties, as you've heard, but it addresses their larger healthcare needs in addition to, for them, it would be chemical health, and for our PINS project, it would be mental health. So instead of just looking at this small snapshot of the chemical health needs and working to address those in housing. We think it's important, and this is the language on the lines 3.30 to 3.32, to look at take a more comprehensive approach to not just manage their chemical health issues, but their broader health care needs. For example, if they have their chemical health issue well addressed through this Navigator program, which we would hope, you want to make sure that their diabetes isn't getting out of control, or you want to make sure that their high blood pressure is under control. And that's what we would be working to coordinate and manage across a broader spectrum of issues. So just to clarify, that language on 3.28 and 3.29 would put them in fee-for-service, where that broader coordination of their health care needs, we would say, would not be addressed. So we look forward to working with the author and advocates on that and appreciate the opportunity to testify.
Thank you. Are there questions for members? Representative Abler.
Well, thanks. I can comment on this and ask some other questions when you get off this topic. Madam Chair, these people could also be in a healthcare home in fee-for-service, and we talked a lot about ways that people that are in managed care or other ways in medical assistance can get some service. Isn't it already an option? Do these people have to be in managed care, or is that an option, Mr. McLaren?
Mr. McLaren.
Madam Chair and Representative Abler, I think that other folks could probably speak more accurately to this or more expertly, but in talking to them before the committee hearing, it's my understanding that the pilot project that they have going on allows these populations to either enroll in managed care or to be into fee-for-service. But outside this pilot project, they would be required to be in managed care, and I would let them correct it if that's...
Madam Chair, because we did the competitive bidding, that's right. And so different providers can work in different counties. And you had Dakota County? Medica wound up in Dakota, was that right?
So,
Mr. McLaren.
Madam Chair and Representative Abler, so we still have the PINS project in Dakota County.
Yeah, okay. All right. I have for this witness. Later okay. I have questions. Yeah.
All right, well, Representative Huntley wants to say something. Not to this witness. Okay. Ms. Rupp, did you want to respond?
Madam Chair, I just want to clarify that when the pilot project was initiated, this was for clients who were part of the consolidated fund, and the Navigator, part of their job is to access medical care and to coordinate those services. When the Navigator was doing their job, of course, they helped them apply for assistance, and that's when they became eligible for PMAP. PMAPs do not have this benefit set as part of their health care at the present time. So they lost access to all of these services when they became enrolled in PMAP. So therefore, we worked with the Department of Human Services that if we had started work with someone as part of the pilot project, that we could give them a choice. Either you can go enroll in PMAP, which is your choice, or else we can put you on fee for service and you can continue to access the services of the pilot project. We had clients who did both. Some of them wanted to continue PMAP services, and some of them did choose to stay with the pilot project. I believe the counties would be very willing when managed care entities can provide these services to work with them to coordinate.
All right. So it sounds like it's quite a catch-22. You start working with somebody, you identify them, they need services, you sign them up, and whoops, they're out of your program, right, in some cases. Okay, so and as I'm reading this language, Mr. McLaren, it sounds like this is just that they don't have mandatory enrollment in managed care, so they still could enroll in managed care or fee-for-service, probably in with some consultation with their Navigator to see which thing will work for them the best. That's how I'm understanding this, Mr. McLaren.
Yeah, Madam Chair, that's true. So it would be an option. And as I spoke earlier, if they were in fee-for-service, then they would just be getting some of these chemical health coordination along with the housing and social service through the program that they're talking about. One of the key pieces that all the people who, even if they were to start to look at coordinating their broader health care needs, They would not have access to some key data that would help them be effective in doing that. So that's one of the key differences between enrolling in managed care and having that data available and working with them to do that versus fee-for-service where that information isn't available.
And just I want to let Ms. Rupp respond because she made a face, so she needs to tell us what that meant.
Madam Chair, I apologize.
I will do a
better job of controlling my facial expressions. I'm a little puzzled, honestly, because the navigator goes to medical appointments with the client, speaks with the doctor, they make psychiatric appointments, they pick them up because they don't have transportation. They work very closely with these clients to make sure that they're getting the medical care that they need and to coordinate it with the providers as necessary.
Okay, thank you. Questions? More questions? All right. Representative Huntley.
Well, just a comment, Madam Chair. I have the CD upstairs, but probably 10, 15 years ago on 60 Minutes, they had a thing on the homeless in New York City. And so you can probably double or triple the dollar amounts given that time, but back then it was costing New York City $40,000 a year for a homeless person because of all the ins and outs that they did. And so when you think about these people, they're not for free. You know, they may be passed out or sleeping in a doorway someplace, but they're still costing the community a lot of money. And practically all of the homeless people have both chemical dependency problems and mental health issues. So they're intermixed. They're not separate for most of the population. And I will say in the New York City one, simply giving these people a single room occupancy place cut their spending in half from $40,000 a year to $20,000 a year. So my main point is...
It costs $2,000.
Two main points. One is there's a mixture of almost all of them have both mental health and chemical dependency. And secondly, they need a place to stay. And that takes care of most of their problems.
Thank you. Representative Abler.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, to this point, and then I have some questions to the bill. But this managed care thing is an interesting thing. I mean, these will be statewide folks. I presume a number will be metro. And I think the author will want to investigate the managed care question or not. And just to remind people that a navigator is different than a healthcare home where they consider all their healthcare needs and the person's some kind of health professional. That's my just so it's some homework, and this is going to go to finance. And so, Representative Schoen, you can enter the world of health financing and healthcare financing and learn about Hennepin Health, how they might want to work with this. They may have some ideas, and so we don't want to lose. We going statewide. This is a great thing. And to the bill, Madam Chair, this is a really good proposal. It worked. It's an example of how things work well in the state when two counties pilot something, and it's successful. It's good that MICA can bring it forward. You know, we need more organizations as good as MICA to, that's an inside joke for my county. I think MICA is a really good organization and, they should thrive. Everybody should be in MICA. And so I think that the thought that, you can send that home for me. If you can get more value for the same dollars, I'm all for it. Madam Chair, to the bill, there's, some finance provisions that I don't have to ask about here, but when you get to a finance committee, Representative Schoen, I'm going to ask about how you're capturing forecasted expenditures. I've been trying to do that for some time. That's usually a problem. And I'll ask the department to comment about that, if they're going to go with that or not. And you'll have to meet Commissioner Showalter, who might have an opinion that may be different than mine and yours. I'm curious, can you tell me what kind of waivers you have to get? The waivers are in line 3.30. Are those going to be hard to get, and is this going to delay the onset of this program?
Ms. Brock?
Madam Chair and Representative, it's my understanding that because this is not in the benefit set at the present time,
for health plans and health care, that I believe then you have to include that in your federal plan for Medicaid, and then you also have to include it in your contract for health plans.
Okay, and Madam Chair.
Representative Abler.
Is it in fee-for-service now, but it's not in our capitated HMO plans?
Representative, it is not in fee-for-service. It is only allowed as part of these pilots.
I got it. And so, Madam Chair, just on this mandatory thing, it may be once it's included as a fee-for-service allowable thing, the contract could be extended to these individuals in the managed world, and so you can... Even though I sometimes speak on behalf of health plans, sometimes I speak against health plans. So I'm on either right and wrong on various things, and they have some good ideas that we want to capture, and still yet the counties have their flexibility. And Madam Chair, just one other question.
Representative.
Can you comment on line 315 about putting current or federal funding at risk? All the more reason, Madam Chair, I wanted to get a global waiver just to let us have the money and do stuff our way. And anyway, so that's a different year and a different bill. But can you comment? Can somebody comment about why you have to put that sentence in? What might put us at risk?
Ms. Rupp.
Madam Chair, Representative, when the pilot projects were initiated, there was concern that the consolidated fund is composed of federal dollars, state dollars, and county dollars, and that there is a formula that is very complicated about matching dollars, federal dollars, for treatment. And there is a concern that we do not want to jeopardize drawing down those federal dollars. And so that was one of the assurances that we gave in the pilot project, and that we would want to continue to give to the state, that we will not jeopardize federal dollars.
Madam Chair.
Representative Abler.
Well, and good for that. I won't restate what I just said about Minnesota's better than the feds. But I wish you well in this project. I hope you're successful. There's a few bugs to work out, but I'll help you if I can.
All right. Is there Representative Loeffler?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just for when we get to the finance consideration of this, I know in the past we have really ratcheted back who qualifies for the Consolidated Community Development or the Community Chemical Health Treatment Fund. And I think we really need to think about if this will, you know, in the end, you know, how it matches with all those other people knocking on the door for it. But I really like the idea of the program and its outcomes. I did notice on Section C on line 2.27 in the definition of non-treatment services, it looks like all of them are time-limited sort of supports, except for the supported employment. And I'm wondering if that would be an ongoing obligation to someone who might go through this program, as opposed to transitional supported employment to help them, you know, get readjusted to the demands of working again. Because I do think we have to be careful with the Consolidated Treatment Fund not to have people dependent on it for ongoing supports when we have so many people who are in need of the initial help in overcoming chemical dependency. And so I would really like us to focus the program on transitioning people to stability, but not having ongoing supports out of this particular funding source. I think there are other funding sources you might be able to tap, but that's an issue that we can address in the Finance Committee. I just wanted to give the author and the people in the program a heads up that that's something they should think about, because that would be a very unusual use of this fund.
Thank you, Representative Loeffler. Okay, I don't know if anybody wanted to respond. Ms. Rupp, did you want to respond?
Madam Chair and Representative, I just want to mention that there's a much larger planning process that's occurring right now at the Department of Human Services. I believe we refer to it as the CD Steering Committee. I'm looking at a couple of my DHS colleagues in the audience. And I can tell you that great effort is being made to look, and you'll be receiving a report from the department. Great effort is being made to look at the whole CD system of care and to look at what changes need to happen and how can we incorporate some of these services, continuing care services, in a greater system.
Okay. Thank you very much. All right. Representative Mack.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just a brief point. I appreciate this bill and what it's attempting to do, and
have come to a greater understanding the last couple of years of the huge issue the state faces with chemical dependency and creative ways to address that. And I guess just want to point out to members, this is a voluntary basis where counties can opt in. And I know my county is a supporter of this issue. And so just want to point out, if this program is proving itself and proving to put out good data in terms of changing people's lives and getting them off of what is more expensive for the state to become a more productive member of society, then more counties will buy in. If it doesn't work, I think the program will fold on itself. So that's why I'm supporting it, and thank you for your leadership on it.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Representative Mack. Other questions, members? Representative Abler.
Well, one I forgot. I was trying to be concise. Speaking of counties joining, can counties join together in this? It just says counties as individuals. Is there a way for two counties to become kind of a coalition in this work for their two counties together?
Ms. Rupp.
Madam Chair and Representative, that might have been more our oversight, because obviously we have a wonderful example of Region 10 working together currently, and I think there is encouragement for counties more and more to work together.
And Madam Chair, that's the future, I think. Maybe the author wants to work on an amendment just to even give some consideration for counties that want to join. We already have a framework in service delivery authorities, and maybe you could do an SDA for this if you have outcomes or just something, but just to encourage more of that.
All right. Is there anybody in the audience who wants to testify for or against this bill? Okay. Seeing none and seeing no other questions. We've got somebody over here. Please come down and give us your testimony. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name and tell us who you represent, if anybody.
My name's Kevin Evenson. I'm the director of the Alcohol and Drug Abuse Division with the Department of Human Services.
Welcome.
Please. And I'm Jeffrey Hunsberger. I also work at the Department of Human Services in the Alcohol and Drug Abuse Division.
Okay. Welcome to the committee. Please go ahead, Mr. Evenson.
Madam Chair, committee. As I said before, my name is Kevin Evenson, and I just wanted to make a couple of comments. We really do support this effort in the spirit of the effort, because we certainly see that this is a direction that the whole nation is going in regards to the treatment of individuals with chemical dependency or substance use disorders. I would like to take just a little bit of time to talk about a couple of reports that are coming your way. There's two legislative reports that are coming. One is a report directly on the pilot projects that the 11 counties are participants in, and that report will be finished January of 2014. And I think the reason for the delay on that was because it took the project a while to get going, and they wanted to make sure that they collected all of the data. I think they're collecting data through July of this year, and then they'll use the remaining time to put together the report for legislation. So that would or should answer a lot of your questions in regards to the outcomes of the pilots. The second thing that I wanted to say is March 15th will be the date where you will get another legislative report as a result of the Navigator project or a pilot project. And that report will be produced as a result of legislation which came through last year. And that legislation requested the Department of Human Services along with stakeholders to take a look at the CD continuum of care and to take a look at the gaps in the care for individuals that have substance use disorders, and to also take a look at efficiencies. And that report will be finished on March 15th, and it will be submitted. And we've taken a look at not only care coordination or intensive case management services as a part of that, but also access to treatment services, telehealth. There's about five other areas that we've also looked at in that process. And we did that with counties, with the tribes, and with treatment providers, So it'll be a fairly robust report also.
Great. Thank you very much. That's good to know. We'll look forward to hearing those. So I think we're Representative Abler, and then I think we're ready to vote on the bill.
Yeah, well, Madam Chair, Mr. Evenson, thank you for that. How does that affect your view of this bill?
Mr. Evenson.
We want those reports and all that. Is that what you came to say, or is that you just... So tell us your opinion about this bill.
Bill, I think, in the spirit of things, we do support it. It's an implementation that there may be some issues.
Yeah.
We have a concern that the Consolidated Treatment Fund, the CCDTF, be used for treatment services, and that we also look for alternative ways in order to pay for the auxiliary service or the supporting services.
Okay.
Finance Committee.
Right. I'm sure we'll have more discussion on this in the Finance Committee. All right. Representative Schoen, I think, is ready to renew his motion that House File 455 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Health and Human Services Finance. All in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All opposed, no. The motion prevails, and the bill is passed to Representative Huntley's committee. And I think, members, we have set a record for earliest day so far this session, so we stand adjourned.